Big edition of The Breakfast Club. It's great to have your company. If you missed any of the good stuff, here's a snippet of what we did.
Busy morning ahead, and I'm very, very keen to find out more about what Adam White thought about last night's game of football very shortly. He joins us again on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Whitey.
Yo, half.
Gee, Trent, he's just distracting us already this morning. Didn't take long. Good morning to you, Daniel Harford. I had the most proud moment almost as a father last night, and almost the least proud moment of my life as a father in my nearly 5 years.
Right, stand by. I want to get to that very shortly. Scotty Gowan, the national platform superstar these days in all forms of media, but the Australian, the Herald Sun, joined us as part of the team this morning. Morning, Scotland.
Morning, Daniel. I've got no idea what he's about to say either.
So you didn't have those type of issues as a parent last night?
No, I didn't really. I got through. That's always a positive. He is 14, though, so he does it most of it by himself.
Right. Okay, well, let's go back to pride. What are you talking about, Waddy?
Last night I sat at my kitchen bench with Campbell, and we do our tips for the RSN 927 tipping competition.
Yes.
And
is he winning?
He's beating me. He's not quite winning, but he's beating me. And we go to the first game, Hawthorn versus Adelaide.
Oh, no.
And he says, well, Hawthorn. And I said, now, Campbell, Hawthorn is going to the Adelaide Oval to take on the Crows. They will probably get beaten by 100 points. No, I'm going for Hawthorn. I said, Campbell, look, let's just put Adelaide, we'll move to the next game. Yes, yeah, you're going to be disappointed. Daddy, Hawthorn is my team. I'm not tipping against the Hawks.
Oh, I like this. I like this boy.
And I said to Campbell, that is a really good sign of loyalty. I'm very proud of you that you are not going to tip against your team. Really, that's a really good boy. Thank you, Daddy. What's the next game? So we move on to the tips. About 5 minutes later, I just go back into the computer and thought about Campbell. I'm not going to let him, just give up a tip. So I changed it to Adelaide without him knowing.
Oh, no.
Thinking, well,
you're kidding.
Can't do that.
Now, I did that, and I also did it to my wife's tipping, because she also picked Hawthorn as a Hawthorn supporter.
Who do you think you are, mate? Who do you think you are?
Well, I just thought I was doing, the right thing, because they were stupid tipping Hawthorn.
Wow.
Now, I've just received a text message, and I've got a feeling that Emma knew that I changed. Yes, Emma knew that I changed her tip. She didn't know I had to change Campbell's tip. She's not happy. I copped it from my wife, half.
Good.
How dare you? Hey, I thought Hawthorn could win that game. I may as well just give up if you're going to go around changing my tips.
She makes valid points.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with any of that.
So Campbell doesn't know that I've done it, so I feel terrible that I went against his loyalty selection.
So, Daniel, are the streets empty, or is there mourning? What's happening over in Adelaide?
Well, far be it from me to have a real assessment of the pulse of the city of Adelaide, where I am at the moment. So I thought what I'd do is headlock someone on the way in and get them to tell us how exactly they are feeling. What's been a very, very big week here in the city of Churches. And it's an absolute pleasure to have one of the biggest names in football in the state of Adelaide as part of the Breakfast Club this morning. And, of course, a former Adelaide Cup winning jockey, Tom Wren, joins us on the Breakfast. Good morning, Tommy.
Half Whitey, Scotty, boys, thanks for having me on. Whitey, you're in a world of pain. It's going to be a very long weekend for you, my friend.
Yes, it will be.
Now, Tommy, you've come in here. You're okay. You're a bubbly sort of character. But the city of Adelaide is in mourning after last night's performance. What the hell happened?
Well, I can't really blame Whitey for changing the tips. I think everyone just thought it was rock up, get the win, go home and sit on top of the ladder for another week. But they were dreadful last night. As good as Hawthorn were, the Crows were poor. And I think now, with Bryce Gibbs just dominating the competition at the moment for Carlton, everyone is saying they need another midfielder. They are really battling in there. Rory Sloane, it seems to be the template was set by Melbourne and North Melbourne. Shut down Rory, shut down Adelaide.
That seems to be the case. I mean, Daniel Howe had the job on Rory Sloane last night, and that was probably one of the most pleasing aspects from a Hawthorn perspective, was the job of all the young boys. Howe played on Sloane, you had Burton on Walker, they had Hardwick on Betts. Those young guys were given the opportunity to step up and be a big part of the game last night and did admirable jobs, and all of a sudden they find themselves in winning positions.
And the other thing that will come out as well here in Adelaide is South Australians, there's always a little bit extra on players if they slip through the net and they're from this state.
Mm.
Ryan Burton looks like he's going to be an absolute star. Last night, he looks like he's just about immoral for the Rising Star nomination. He is just doing that well at the moment. And the fact that he slipped through and went to pick 19, and the Crows and Port both had the opportunity to get him. A few questions will be asked by a lot of supporters. No doubt about that over here.
He was awesome last night, Ryan Burton. Absolutely, against Taylor Walker. Two very important goals in that third term to get things back on track from the Hawks. Boys, the performance of Adelaide, I reckon that's intriguing. One of the things that they had shown me through the year was a real dominance with their movement from back to forward, defensive 50 to forward 50. Hawthorn shut them down last night, and there didn't seem to be, Whitey, a plan B from Adelaide.
Well, I think that's the problem with Adelaide. I don't know whether there is. I mean, if you go back to that game against North Melbourne where the Kangaroos started really well, it was almost like North Melbourne was playing a foreign sport and the Crows just didn't know how to handle it, even though it didn't look like they were doing too much different. And last night was a bit the same in that when they couldn't get it on its terms, Adelaide, it just didn't really know how to find a solution to it. And what we saw in the first quarter was what we were seeing in the third quarter and the last quarter. And I think that's fairly damning, half, from an Adelaide and a Dom Pike point of view, that they can't seem to play any other way than the A game.
It's time, half. I mean, we've got enough evidence. They cannot win the flag. And look, Melbourne took them apart on their home deck. Hawthorn have, and we spoke about North. Geelong dismantled them in Geelong, and everyone said, oh, that's just Geelong. Their midfield, as Tommy and you alluded to, lacks a star. And the forward line, you know, the captain's down there, he can't get into the game. They cannot win the flag, and they're false favourites and always have been, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably right after last night's performance, Tommy. They were ultra disappointing. Now, we are selling the Hawks a touch short, particularly that second half of Hawthorn, which was really impressive. They turned all the key numbers around. They came into the game last night as the number 18 contested possession team, 17 scores from turnovers, 17 centre clearances, 16 inside 50s in the last half. And Adelaide were 1 and 2 in those categories for the competition. In the last half, they turned them around on a tear. Contested possessions went up, clearances they won, inside 50s they won, and all of a sudden they walk away with a 14-point victory. And that was what was most disappointing from my perspective watching Adelaide, is that they didn't have, once they didn't win the contested footy, there was no other way. And Cameron Ling spoke about it last night when I was talking to him, that because they're so committed to their plan, they trust their players to win the ball one-on-one, the contested footy, and they start to position themselves ahead of the ball to get on the end of the chain. Mm-hmm. When Hawthorn started winning the ball, they were still positioning themselves ahead of the ball, so they actually couldn't impact the contest, and Hawthorn had more numbers around the contest to spread and break forward.
And Scotty and Whitey have touched on it, and they're absolutely right, and the talkback lines over in Adelaide will be going red-hot today. Where is plan B? Where is plan C? We heard Ange Postecoglou when they came over saying, we've got a plan B, C, D, E, and Don Pike was saying, we don't really need to tinker too much with what we've got, and that's the frustration amongst a lot of fans. When it's not going right, when it's going well, brilliant, but when it's not, where is that other plan? The other issue they've got is, have they got someone in there to be a bull like Rory Sloane? At the moment, last night at least anyway, they were relying on a fifth gamer, Hugh Greenwood, to carry the bulk of the load. So that is the issue. They're a midfielder, maybe too short, and they just kept trying to play down the middle the whole game, whereas Hawthorn were using width, and they just got burnt.
Half, I've got a question for you. I want you to put the numbers to the side for a moment. You were at the Adelaide Oval, you're watching the game.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this happening to Adelaide? And why were Hawthorn so much better? Just again, without the numbers, I mean, what's missing from Adelaide, and what was different from Hawthorn in your view?
Well, I think Adelaide's inability to work the ball from back to front. Work the ball laterally from stoppages is one of their issues. They seem to just burst forward all the time, and if they can't burst forward, there's no real system to their play. What Hawthorn did really well last night, and Tommy just touched on it, was spread the field and really make them defend every ball. And I reckon in the last couple of weeks, Hawthorn have got into a game where they've tried to play really fast, and it's not their brand of footy. And what they wanted to do last night was own the footy, make Adelaide defend, and draw them out of the positions, the good positions where Hawthorn ultimately want to get the ball to. So that was one of the issues from Adelaide defensively. But I think offensively, because they're so well drilled and so have been so strong in getting on the end of the ball, that they just start to work forward of the footy too often.
Yep.
And there's not enough gumption, I suppose, to make sure the footy's been won in the first place.
Yep.
They're waiting for it to be won before they start to move, and I just think they need to address that, reset their starting positions is basically what I would have done last night.
So if you then fold in the stats on top of that, because I think you make some really good points, Hawthorn last night had 21 intercept marks. Yep. Now, that's a high number for Hawthorn this year. But what they're able to do is that when they won the ball back from an intercept, then they had a lot of Adelaide players that were out of position and they were able to score quite easily as a result of that. Now, Hawthorn has had their scoring issues. They've kicked 14 goals, 12 last night. And a lot of that were really easy goals. And I think what you say, I'm not sure whether Adelaide respects the opposition enough. It's almost like, well, we're going to play our game almost like it's training. Yeah. And if the opposition get in the way, well, that's a bit of bad luck.
Well, that's going to be a concern for them if that's the theory. But I reckon you're right. I just reckon they're so ingrained into what they want to do that even when it's not going on their terms, there's no adjustment. And that came back to bite them on the bum last night. And I think your point about Hawthorn's ability to score effectively once inside 50, particularly early in the game where they didn't get too many opportunities, really, was a bit damning on Adelaide's defensive setup behind the ball. And as I said before, I just think they're so confident about winning the footy in the first place that they just start to move before it's even been won. And if it doesn't get won, that's when they get caught with their pants down.
Tommy, I mean, you know Dom Pike. He doesn't strike me as a coach who makes a lot of moves. And I was sitting on the couch a long way away and I thought, Grant Birchall and Luke Hodge are getting a bit of the ball. This was very early in the game. Maybe I should spend some time into those two. And he didn't. And they won them the game.
And that was exactly the criticism that came the week before when they didn't put someone to Joel Selwood until the game was two. It was gone, Scotty, against the Cats. And that's been the criticism. He was in that school of Neil Craig as well, who used to do the same kind of preparation. Stick with what we know. Stick with what we've got. Rather than just throwing the magnets around on the board and saying, you know what, it's not working. Let's change it now. Let's change it in the second quarter. I was at the game last night as well. And the general feeling around the place was that Alistair Clarkson just pulled the wool over Adelaide's eyes and just outcoached him, you know, hands down.
I'm not defending Dom Pike here, Half, but it's one of those things that you look at Adelaide's team and you don't see it as being a team, you know, of that is a top one or a top two team. So you kind of think, well, Dom Pike's doing really well to get what he's getting out of that team. But then when you look at it the other way and you see them play the way they played last night when someone challenged them, and you think, well, maybe Dom Pike's got to do something differently. So it's a difficult one, I think, for him.
I just reckon that coaches need to have other tricks up their sleeve.
Yep.
Correct.
And I'm not sure that... I just think we're in an era where not too many coaches are willing to do that because of the fear of what might be if that doesn't work. I don't know why there doesn't seem to be more moves made through a game or more system, different systems tried where things aren't going their way. It seems to be a reluctance from a lot of coaches to really try anything different, Tommy.
The other thing as well is, boys, who are the real Crows? Is it the Crows from the first 6 weeks when they were untouchable, or is it the Crows from the last seven where they've gone 3-4? I mean, I just don't know. I think now, more than ever, we're confused with where the Crows are at.
Last seven, comfortably. They caught everyone out at the start of the season and they've come back to the pack.
They have. Tommy, always nice to see you.
Good on you, boys.
Outstanding.
This is a great commitment, Tommy.
State of mourning this morning.
What time is it over there? 4 o'clock?
It's 2:30 a.m. over here in Adelaide.
It's May the 31st over here.
1942. And it's great to be here, and it's great to be part of the Breakfast Club. Tommy Arend, former Adelaide Cup winning jockey, with us for an update from the City of Churches. They're in mourning over here, and it's fantastic. Big news yesterday with Cale Hooker pulling out of that game, Whitey, which will certainly affect the chances of the Bombers, just before we go too deep into that a little bit later on?
Yeah, absolutely. And apart from anything, he's obviously been playing well the last couple of weeks as a forward, but he gave Essendon some flexibility that if things went pear-shaped early, Hooker could always go back and play on Franklin because he's done that quite a few times in the past. It does make it a little bit more difficult for Essendon. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Just going back to last night's game quickly, are we seeing a bit of a blueprint on how to beat the Crows? We saw Geelong have had this blueprint for a long time about just the way you beat them, and they had anchored a defender behind the ball and just locked that down all night long. Melbourne did a similar thing. And Hawthorn last night had Luke Hodge pretty much controlling the play from that position on the ground, just locking down a spot behind the footy. Is that, if they can't get over the back, Adelaide, are they pretty much a one-trick pony?
Well, Jenkins becomes a one-trick pony, and Jenkins and Lynch, that's why we rave about them, because of that. And Eddie, and they all play a similar way. You're right, it's the over the back. The question I ask for you, Half, Hodge and Burgoyne, do they go on another year to keep teaching what we saw last night? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because these kids can't be left... They're clearly developing. We saw we saw it all. We saw they've got the Hardwick's the small defender. You know, you've got a couple others who are very nice players, you can see. But they've only played 16 games.
Yeah. It's a really good question, that. I don't know how they'll attack it. The way that Luke Hodge played last night, Sean Burgoyne played, Burgoyne was just outstanding.
Ridiculous.
You'd almost, if you're Alistair Clarkson, you'd probably try and persuade them to go again for that coaching reason. And we spoke to Jared Ruffhead, the skipper, after the game, and he was talking about having Hodgie back out there and the difference he makes purely just from an on-field leadership perspective. And he pretty much is the coach on the field. He obviously does his role as a player, but he's out there coaching all his teammates every single moment of the game. And I understand Hodgie was mic'd up last night.
It was actually really good.
On the coverage, and I haven't heard any of that audio. But I think from a feedback we got from a couple of players after the game, that they thought he might have gone over and above because he was mic'd up.
Oh, he would have. He would have lifted.
On a show.
He was screaming at Birchall, who's one of his best mates.
It was a very instructional night from Luke Hodgie on the field.
But that's what he does. And that's, to your point, Scott, I mean, that's how valuable he is. It's not just getting kicks and handballs anymore for Luke Hodgie. It's what he's able to dictate on the field in terms of his leadership that changes games.
So what I saw last night, Josh Gibson, I think, unfortunately, he's hit the wall. Gibbo, well played. Thanks for the memories. But Burgoyne and Hodge, if their bodies allow them, I think they're required.
Well, I think to answer your question, Half, with Hodge, the way the game is played now, where so much of it is about setting up behind the ball, that, and you know, we've spent a fair bit of time over the last couple of weeks talking about runners and the importance or lack of importance of them, but the importance of a leader to be able to set up behind the football and get everyone in the right position. Even if you look at last night, that enabled Hawthorn to turn the ball over from Adelaide a lot because they were in the right position. And if you go back to the game before where Hodge didn't play against Gold Coast, at times Hawthorn was very disorganised behind the ball.
Yeah.
So, you know, we often talk about the importance of that set-up player at a stoppage to make sure everyone's at the right in the right spot, and that's a form of leadership. I don't know whether you can or you can't replace someone like a Luke Hodge who's played that role so well for so long to just get everybody in the right position, particularly if it's a young defence as it was last night.
But then you've got to weigh up. Do you go on 1 year, two more? You know, it's that.
But I think it's a different type of situation with Hodge because you're not. It's not just about him getting the ball and having an impact with what he does with ball in hand. It's also about what he's doing as an assistant coach out on the field.
And the thing we saw last night, and I'm not sure it was just on the back of Luke Hodge, but there was some changes last night which made Hawthorn look a bit better balanced. And Schoenmaker's coming in playing that second key tall. With Tim O'Brien, I thought made a huge difference. Vickery's tried to play that role and they've tried to give him that opportunity, but I don't think it's worked for Tyrone to this point in time. Schoenmaker's, I thought, was really important in that role. Sicily went back, and there was a lot of discussion about that pre-season, about where's James Sicily play his best footy, and I'm a bit of a fan of James Sicily forward. I just don't think he works hard enough when he's in that area of the ground, but he was really valuable last night in that sweeping half-back role.
He can mark. How casual is he when he's got the ball, though? He's going to get caught every time.
I was thinking about this last night with Sicily because I think he's got something pretty special.
Oh, he's clearly that. He's one of those players.
Now, I don't want to be disrespectful to James Sicily here, but I'm going to try and make a comparison here, Half, and please just bear with me here. He reminds me of a precocious colt who's a really got a lot of talent as a racehorse, but needs to be gelded to settle him down and get him to behave out on the field. It's almost like that with Sicily. He needs something to happen just to eradicate a lot of the precociousness to just settle him down and be a consistent, genuine footballer because he's got all the armoury to be a really good player.
Yeah,
does that kind of make sense?
Yes. Yeah, no, I agree. I'm a fan.
I'm not saying he should get rid of his, you know, wife.
No, I think he should keep them just for a later date. You never know when you might need them. So, James, if you're listening, hopefully you get a hold of them and just keep away from Adam White. But I agree with you. I think he's a real talent. I just want to see him fulfil that talent in the next little while.
Half, I know we're going to our break, but we will touch on the worst decision of the year later in the next hour.
Oh, right, eh?
The worst decision of all time.
We haven't even discussed this, but I know what you're talking about.
Goal review.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, okay, we'll do that.
Wait. It needs half an hour discussion.
Hold. Good morning, Quinny.
G'day, Half. I'm still trying to get over Trent Langscale's wrapping yesterday, but hopefully we've recovered enough to find a winner at headquarters tomorrow.
I'm keen to find out how you're going to top that this morning. I'm looking forward to just a little explosion of personality through the morning, so I'm sure that'll be on file very, very shortly, but we'll get to that soon. Sam Hyland is the winter specialist on the Breakfast Club Friday form, and it's great to have him back after an awesome debut last week. Good morning, Sammy.
Good morning, Daniel.
Great to have you on board. Now, week two of your winter specialist activities. Was there a review of your own form last week?
Well, it was just tough, wasn't it, last Saturday? It was tough. But, you know, when Black Tomahawk gets up at 50 to 1 and...
Thought you would have had that.
But let's not make excuses. It wasn't good enough.
Had it, Sam.
Yeah, that's right.
That, you know? On top.
But anyway, we're back again this week, so we're going to have another go.
Right, we're at headquarters. I know this is one of your favourite tracks at headquarters. So let's get to it. Let's have a look at the Melbourne Quaddie at this stage on a Friday morning. Of course, really drill down to that tomorrow on the punters panel. But the first race is race 6 over the 1,100 metres down the famous straight there at Flemington. And it's a big field to start with. We've got 16 runners going around, Sammy. I think the friends at the tab have got Ability, number 15, for Smurden and Williams as the favourite. How have you seen this to start the Quaddie?
I've gone 4, 15, 8 and 9. Mighty Like, this horse, is great first up. He's won up the straight before. Mick Price's horse is always forward early in the preparation. He's a good galloper, 38 starts for 10 wins. So that suggests he likes winning half. And I think he's a bit of value there.
$21. Sammy.
Number 15, Ability, is an improved horse since being gelded. And the first up win was top change. Class. But... it won't surprise me to see him win again. 8, Rough Justice, top first up running. He'll have tightened up nicely from that. Ben Thompson's had a few rides on him, which means a lot, you know, counts for a lot. And knowing the horse, it's always a good thing. And number 9, Lake Como. How well-trained is this man? This bloke, Pat Ireland, has got her flying. So she loves a straight, 4 starts for 3 wins. So I think I think they'll be coming to middle to outside in the straight half. And, I think she'll sit handy and she'll be around the money again.
I was going to ask you where you want to be drawn. I know it's Friday and we've got racing tomorrow there, so the track might have a little bit of alteration in terms of how it will race, but you're suggesting that middle and outside rail would be the place to be.
Yeah, in the straight races for sure, and it won't surprise me around the circle races if they start getting a few away from the fence because, it comes out to the 9 metres, the rail. There's a little bit of wear on the inside there. And Lambo Keith expecting to get to a good 3 tomorrow. So we haven't had any rain, and he hasn't watered too much. So
In your time as a jockey, your illustrious jockey career, when it came to a straight race, did you enjoy those because of the challenge of where to go? Because punters often find it incredibly frustrating.
I hated them.
Yeah, buddy. I was going to say, as a jockey, what was it like?
Well, it's just, I guess if you get on a good straight horse, which Lake Como is, then, it's a good thing. But so many times you would ride horses up the straight and they weren't suited to it. They're always looking for a turn. And naturally, it didn't come. So it's, it can be quite difficult. But as I say, when you get a horse that is effective up the straight, it can mean a couple of lengths too.
So it's more about the horse's ability as opposed to finding that right lane.
With jockey's ability.
Yeah, that's right. It's a foreign thing, isn't it?
They slaughter them a lot down the street.
Most horses are trained around a circle every morning, so lots of horses obviously go to the races looking for the bend, and when they have to go in a straight line, that's why horses can mix their form up so much with a straight race.
Sometimes I go in circles in the morning. Quinny, Mighty Lake is $21 to what I can see.
Extraordinary.
Absolutely spot on. I dare say that will be very popular on the back of that tip. But the best backed runner in the race is number 15, Ability. Open to $7 chance, has been backed all the way down to $4.40. In 3 runs second up, Ability, 2 wins and a second. And I dare say punters are focused on that fact.
All right, so a couple of value options there from Sammy to get us going in the Quaddie. Numbers 4, 15, 8 and 9. The second leg is the David Burke Provincial Plate over the 1,600 metres at Flemington. 13 going around, Sammy. Rewarding effort for Cindy Alderson, who was with Blue Eyes on Racing's open mic throughout the week. It was fantastic listening. What do you reckon?
Yep, the David Burke Provincial Plate. Great chairman and a lovely man. Terrific, this race named in his honour. And look, rewarding effort. This horse is really well placed. The two runs in have been really good. The trip's perfect for him. Two starts at the mile for two wins. And he's got a really short sprint, this horse, so you've just got to save him up for that boom at the end of the race. And Craig Williams, he'll be all over that. 7, Hot Ruby, carries the McPhee colours, doesn't mind a second, this mare, which is always a concern. She's had 9 of them.
Second's and, no good to a Sammy, you know that, don't you?
It puts her in that sausage category, doesn't it? So, but she does like Flemington, and this is a good race for her. 9, Trinity Hill, been racing well, this mare, drawn to have the perfect run, and getting to the mile looks right up her alley. And 5, Elite Tiger, should stride forward from that gate. He's a tough sort. I think he'll run really well.
Quinny?
Yeah, rewarding effort heads the market from the sausage Hot Ruby. So it's at 4.20 rewarding effort. Hot Ruby, the second elect at 5. Victory Down, 7.50. It's been a little bit of interest in two runners at big odds, numbers 2 and 3. Number 2, Lucky Paddy, 19. Number 3, By the Grace at 18. Does look a wide leg of the quaddy, though, this one, Sammy.
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
If you were putting a few other numbers in for those that are playing the quaddy, if you think this is a tough race.
11 goes in, Sammy.
Well, you've been very quiet, Scotty. Step up, would you?
No, he's writing the numbers.
I'm letting the new bloke do his thing, Daniel. You don't interrupt Sammy when he's got a head of steam.
Well, best of luck to Steve Pateman with Zagaya. And as you say, Whitey, looks a really, really good chance. Daniel Moore's riding well, and it's a bit of value in the quaddy, isn't it?
Righto. So 11 goes in with 6, 7, 9, and 5 for the second leg.
Now, there's a moral in the next leg, so I'll be interested to see what our expert has.
Oh, righto. Well, hang on a second. I'm just going through. There's no London Fog in here. Can't be really a moral. 1,400 metres, a race 8 at headquarters. $100,000 up for grabs, as there is for all the races tomorrow at Flemington. How do you narrow this field down, Sammy?
The Brian Beattie handicap, and this another chairman of Racing Victoria that I'm sure he'll be having a bet in this. And look, this race, I've gone 1, 2, 9, and 3.
Oh, no.
Royal Rupture. Tough as nails, this galloper. Now, I listened to Aidan O'Brien on Wednesday night, and he described Highland Reel as concrete. And this horse, this is a good way to sum this rooster up. I'll tell you, 50 starts, 15 wins. He is a ripper. So
I've had a few horses that have been racing like concrete. That's been a bad thing, Sam.
No, he's tough. This horse is tough. So 1, 2, 9, and 3. Sahitsi,
Brendan
McCool, and his partner, Imogen Miller, they have this galloper flying. He loves a real bowling tempo, and that's what he'll provide here. He'll get out and he'll roll. He can win again. Canny Essent, very impressive under the big weight last start. He'll need a bit of luck from the gate, but has to be included. And number 3, Hard Call, Geordie Childs, good jockey. He knows how to win on this horse, and he'll be a bit of value in the quaddy if he gets up.
Why is it a moral, Scotty, number 2?
It won the Echuca Cup. The race the Fog was going to win until there was an injury setback. And then last start, you had to see it to believe, Sammy. It just kept going on a bit of a run-on day, but it just blew them away.
Yeah, he's...
It's up in weight, I understand that, but I was pretty impressed with what I saw.
He's in super form, and, you know, he's another horse that's a real winner, you know, 10 wins behind him, and he's relatively lightly raced, isn't he? But he loves it.
He's a star.
Supporting the market, Quinny?
The money has come for Canny Essent. Zaitsi had been replaced as favourite late last night. Zaitsi now a $3.70 chance. Canny Essent $3.60. Invincible $7.50 on the third line of betting. Then we've got Loyalty Man $8.50. Royal Rapture a $9 chance there for you, Sammy. So if you do like Scotty's tip in Zaitsi, you can take $3.70. Royal Rapture a $9 chance.
And Loyalty Man's the other one, Sammy. That was a good run first up.
Yeah,
it's 1 second up.
You can't put them all in, Scott.
I just put the things that win in. This is a thing me and Dean Lester sort of get happening.
Okay.
You can't just bring the world's greatest form analyst into the conversation.
No, I have to. He's listening. I want to make him feel welcome. No, we're missing him.
He's always welcome, absolutely, on the Friday form, Dino, but he's having a well-earned rest while the winter specialist has taken over. And he's got one leg to go for us at Flemington before we have a look at a couple of races at in Brisbane. The Bay and Rangers Region Handicap, which is a fantastic name for a race. 1,600 metres, Sammy. We've got 16 going around, and I would have thought that Samavari would be tough to beat because the Hazers as a dabbing team are hot to trot.
We've got her in the mix, huh?
Oh, I like this.
Hang on.
Let's go. 10, 9, 3, and 2. The passage in the Tony Kushka colours. Sectionals were really good at the end of the race last time. Very honest galloper. And with the right run, he's going to be steaming down the outside for that quirky jockey, Dean Yendall. Number 9.
He's mad.
Jaminza, something like that. This horse will love every bit of the mile here, and it was great last start from last. Samavore has form around the good Padrina last time. She looks like she's just yelling out for the mile and further. So Ollie on again, he'll be better for having the spin on her last time. And Widgie Turf, good galloper, is doing everything right, and long straight's going to suit him.
Anything we missed, Scotty?
Well, Urban Ruler cost me the quaddie 2 weeks ago, so I'm emotional if it gets anywhere near it again. Out of barrier 17, the top weight, surely it won't. No, I think we're going. This is a field leg, Nick Quinn, if I was a betting man.
If you're a betting man, I'd like to take the $1.80. You'll be taking a quaddie tomorrow. And there has been support for the runner at Big Odds. You mentioned Urban Ruler, 13 into 10 despite the wide gate. So maybe keep that too. You must be just counting the cash. I don't know why you work. It must be just to spend time with us all. But
a man of the people.
Samavare hits the market at 360 here. Widgie Turf, the second elect at 550. The Passage, 750. $8 or better the rest, but it does look an open way to end the Flemington Quaddy, which hopefully we're all live going into the lucky last on the back of Sammy's tips.
Right, so we've got 4, 15, 8, 9 from 6, 7, 9, 5. Throw in 11 if you need to. 1, 2, 9, 3. You might want to throw in 6 on Scotty's advice, or 10, 9, 3, 2, and throw in the one that broke Scotty's heart last start for the Flemington Quaddy boys.
If we're throwing extras in half, just in the first leg, number 3, Hussein Eagle. If you can afford it, throw him in because he can pull one out.
It's important information.
I just sense, Half, that second up, Sam, just so much more authority in the voice.
He's really just warmed to the task. When I threw it in,
I told you I'd improve with the run, Whitey. I told you I'd come back better.
His notes are better assembled too.
There's some digital notes.
As soon as I threw it in for the first leg and he came out and said, 4, 15, 8, 9, I thought, we're on here. We are on here.
And he's come armed with a best bet too, Sammy. Break your silence.
Race 2.
Well, good.
Race 2, number 12. Gouges?
Oh, hang on. What sort of research is going on here?
You're going to have a best bet. You need to pronounce the name of the horse correctly.
Right. No, half-sale race horse pronounced.
Definitely Gouges.
He can gallop this horse. It ran a Butler last start at 100-1, and Willow will give him a sweet ride. Watch him to run a race here.
Hang on, that's $15.
Hey, Half, let's get around the G-Dog, the Gouges.
G-Dog, right. I'm just going to absorb that for a second while we have a look at Doomben. We've got two races up there. Continues their carnival. The G-Dog, that's outstanding. The Tattersalls Cup is race 5 on the card, and there's only 7 going around, I think, in this race, Semi. And it's going to be tough to beat Rudy after that form race last start that it ran in. Who did it come behind? Self Sense, who went on to win the Ipswich Cup last week.
So in the Tats Cup, we've gone 1, 2, and 7. Rudy's got a really good sprint on him. 2, Toucan Chu, solid Sydney form from the Great Hawks.
Scratched, Sammy. Scratched.
Oh, is it?
Setback for your preparation.
Gone. That's just like a check
at the 150 mark.
Gee, this is bad. This is really bad.
That's all right. Delago Brom style. You're trying to lock in Lonro, but you're Lonro. You've had a check. You'll find a way to hit the line.
Okay,
Sammy.
let's put 3 Pemberley in. Okay? Let's put 3 Pemberley in.
Yeah, good.
And then 7 War Baby.
There's none left. He's got the whole lot.
That's all right. He knows that one's going to win, so he wasn't really concerned about the others, really.
Yeah. Thanks, Huff. Thanks for
Nick Quinn,
there.
Pemberley's one of our people's horses.
Yeah, Pemberley, the OTI runner, a 270 second elect. Rudy's been popular, $2.40. Those two account for about 80% of money invested in the race, so hopefully for favoured backers, it can be a quinella between the 1 and the 3. The third best backed runner is War Baby, a $9.50 chance, but on form, it's hard to see anything topping the top 2 in the market.
All right, let's get to race 7, the Tattersalls Tiara, the Sky Racing Tats Tiara, which is a ripper. Group 1 action, wait for age. Sammy, this is your real bread and butter sort of stuff. Big field, what do you reckon?
15, 3, and 2. Xtheme never runs a bad race. This C Brown on won on it last start. He is a gun jockey, and he can win on it again. 3, In Her Time, knocking on the door, ready to win. And 2, Danish Twist, proven in this class. It'll run a great race.
Righty-o, Quinny.
In Her Time's been heavily backed here. Coming out of the Stradbroke, running second to Impending, was $3.50 despite the white barrier. And punters have snapped that up, backed all the way down to $3.10. Prompt Response, $6.50. Bonnie O'Reilly, 9 with Xtheme. Egyptian Symbol, best of the rest at $12. But one of the better backed runners anywhere across the country today comes up in this feature race in number 3, In Her Time.
All right, best back runners in the country. That's good business. Race 7, number 3, the Tats Tiara at Doomben. McFarlane. Good morning to you, Macca.
G'day, Half. Long time retired from the excavations. how you going, mate? G'day, boys. How you doing?
Good. We're going very well. Gee, there's plenty going on. Last night's footy's got us talking about this crazy year that continues to pop up amazing results. 17 has beaten one again for the second time in 3 weeks.
Yeah, it was fantastic, wasn't it? Almost that game almost single-handedly revives Thursday night footy. I was getting a bit worried with the way some of the games were going. And Luke Hodge, did he almost revive the sounds of the game for Channel 7? Because it was almost a concept that was dead and buried, but I think Hodgie actually revived it last night.
He lifted.
He was fantastic. Like, it was just great instructional stuff. I love the fact there were a couple of incidents where he had a crack at some of the players, but in a really instructive sort of way, including Tom Mitchell. I thought it was fantastic.
I'm keen to hear a bit of that. I didn't get access to that last night in the radio box, but I'm keen to find out what that means and how that sounded for the Hodgie. Because as Jared Ruffett said before, or said last night, they reckon he put on a bit of a showmaker for the TV.
Well, he said that he's obviously heading towards the twilight of his career, and we know that, whether he plays on or not. But he did say that after the game that a few of his Colac mates wanted to know what actually happened out in the field. And he gave him a good lesson in that last night, I reckon.
Now, Macca, we teased before the racing segment about the worst decision this year.
Goal review.
I feared that was going to cost Hawthorn the game, and Alistair Clarkson was going to blow all sorts of cylinders.
And he would have had fair right to.
That was an absolute... A, the goal umpire got himself in a very weird position. And then it was clearly over the line. Jacobs then pushed it into the post.
Was it over the line, all the way past the paddock?
Yes.
That's
yes,
the way it appeared, Half. Was, well and truly was, appeared in on the vision that it was clearly when it was past the post.
It was a biased Adelaide decision.
Oh, biased.
Biased
decision.
No, call it.
Slanderous accusation.
I just thought it was a horrible mistake.
Well, you're not supposed. This is a goal review. You've got 800 cameras. They rushed it and went...
That was the thing, is that...
It was extraordinary.
They seemed almost casual.
Yeah, it's like, to the board.
I just waited... When they said vision pending on the screen, I just thought, this is going to be a goal. No question about that. And then how they line up the ball, and the ball's in the behind post, and I thought, this is not going to be good.
So. Yeah.
I must admit, the replay screen that we had at the time, I actually thought that all of the ball, the entire ball, hadn't passed the padding or the line of the padding, so I wasn't too surprised by that outcome.
It was horrendous, and that guy will be sacked.
Sacked. And hometown decision,
Scott? Oh, no doubt. No
hometown
doubt.
Video. Is that the first ever hometown video decision?
I think so.
Oh, you've got to have some history here and there, don't you?
Bryce Gibbs' future. Oh. We all know what happened last year, and seeing the Adelaide Crows last night, they could have used him. Macca, any chance that he'll end up back there?
Oh, there's still a chance. The Blues are really hopeful that they can talk him around into staying. He's a lot happier than he was towards the end of last year in terms of the home front. Obviously was very keen to go back. And it might be the decision that costs Adelaide any chance of winning the flag. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Absolutely.
Because that's the exact thing that they're missing. A little bit of assistance, a little bit of class in the midfield.
They should have gone harder and been more... happy to give up stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
It's cost them a premiership.
Oh, yeah, it's potentially it's cost them a chance to win a premiership because every other team's fallen over, aren't they? Really, other than GWS, I think all of the frailties of the contenders are on show, and we saw those frailties last night.
Does Bryce Gibbs look like a guy who clearly is happy with life?
Yep.
So why... he looks like a guy in 3 months. Do I need to go to Adelaide? Do you know what I mean?
$1.30 going home.
I think he's more likely to go home than not.
$1.30.
I agree. I think he's more likely to go home than not. But the Blues are making as much ground as they can in trying to keep him because he's playing great footy. And $1.30.
Carlton can play finals within a couple of years.
Yeah, but I don't think it really is a football decision. So I think that.
But has it not settled off field? Or not?
Look, I don't know for certain, but I think that his preference would be to still get home.
So what does Adelaide have to give? Oh, is he?
Well, this is the thing.
Probably have to give up more now.
We're probably
don't
in the same position as where they were last year. There's still got to be a deal done. But my view is that he will still ask to go back to Adelaide at the end of the year. And what he's doing at the moment, he's a professional athlete, so he's got pride in his performance, and it's not that he has any dislike for Carlton. He just wants to go
home. Then Carlton can go the precedent. Oh, yeah, we'll do the same as last year. No, you're not going.
Probably.
Oh, okay, come back. No worries. Away we go.
Look, I wouldn't mind betting that if they got two first-round draft picks or a first-round draft pick and a good player that they might think about it. What's he got left, 2 years or 3 years?
I think it's two. I think it
two
is.
Two more.
So in that regard. But I think... Yeah, I agree. I think you'll probably end up going, but they are doing a lot of work half behind the scenes, Carlton, in terms of trying to retain him there.
Good morning, Boomer.
Yeah, morning, boys.
Considering the situation we found ourselves in with Alex Fasolo a couple of weeks ago, and now yesterday we learned of the battles that Travis Cloke is going through. Is this the courage of players to come out and be more comfortable announcing this type of feedback, or is this a real problem for the game?
Oh, certainly I think it's courage, regardless of if there is a problem or not. I don't know if there's a problem, because it's a very small minority, but is that too many people in the game to come out? The game has changed half in a big way in terms of time at the football club and time you've got to spend in meetings and things like that. And there's not a lot of outlet. I know at the Kangaroos, we get 1 day a week off, and the boys have to do some sort of work or study.
Yep.
There's also a thing called PD time, which is personal development time. And on another day, you get a 4-hour block where they expect you to also, if it's study, continue your study. So you probably get 1 day and 4 hours. So 1.5 days off a week to participate in some sort of work or study.
So is that a 6 day a week or is that a 5 day a week?
Well, it's a 7 day week, really, because you're playing football
on
a Saturday and probably recovering on a Sunday.
Right, okay. So have you actually got, because one of the text messages has come through asking for this to be answered by you, how many hours a week? Is there actually 40 hours, 48 hours, 46 hours? How many hours a week are you actually a footballer?
Well, you're a footballer 24/7. Yeah. If you're a good footballer and you want to go places, you're a footballer 24/7. And that's
Contact
hours, I haven't really put a number on it, but we can work it out really quickly. It's similar to eight. It's sort of 8 to 4. 8 to 4. What's that? It's 6, 7. What's that?
That's 8 hours.
8 hours.
Yeah.
There you go.
You two okay over there?
Yeah, no, we're going all right.
Just need the calculator.
8 hours. You get lunch and smoke in there as well.
Oh, yeah.
No, so you're looking at 8 hours, 5 days a week, and 4 hours another day a week. So
is it? I'm interested in this, Boomer. Is it the contact hours, or is it the accessories that go with it? Is it the world that goes with being an AFL footballer in terms of the scrutiny and the feedback and the relentless conversation that goes around your
social
your
media?
Job?
Yeah. Social media now. There's not too many times you get an opportunity to really switch off, and I guess over the bye weekend that we've just sort of had, the 3-week bye weekend, guys can let their hair down and relax, and you end up, and a lot of players end up binge drinking, I reckon, because that's their outlet.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
That's what happens. You just go and you just go, rightio, I can switch off for a week. Well, you don't switch off for a week. You probably train Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
4 days.
Thursday, maybe, Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. But the scrutiny now, and half when you were playing and I first started, there was, I don't know, how many reporters were there? And the game was getting covered on 3 pages in the Herald Sun. Now, there is every single page you can flick through the paper, and the last 8 pages are football in the Herald Sun. There's social media. There's all these type of things. And yet, literally, don't switch off. There is not a time where you switch off other than probably sleeping.
So how do we become better, Boomer? You're in clubland still. You obviously were playing up until last year and back these days as a coach, as a mentor to a lot of young players. How do we get better to make it easier to balance their lifestyle out as much as we can while still making them, or not making them, but encouraging them to commit and to become that full-time professional athlete that you were talking about before?
So now that I've gone back and played some local football, I've got a little light bulb thing. I think less is more. Like, I honestly do. But obviously, you can't strip it back to 2 nights a week. I think the training schedule is probably a little bit too long during the day. I'm one for getting in there, working as hard as you possibly can, and then getting out and still having something going on outside of football.
Yeah.
So less is more, but it's got to be a fine balance. I don't think you can strip it back to, say, you're doing 40 hours. You can't strip it back to 20. You know, it could be 32, 33, just so you're getting that extra 6-7 hours off a week.
The difficult balance, Scotty, and I'll bring you in here about, say, for example, Geelong, who are a little bit more of an experienced football group. Because I know that Geelong don't have nearly the contact hours that a lot of other clubs, but if you're at Carlton, you're sort of going back to school as a young group are trying to work out a new way of playing under Brendan Bolton versus Geelong that they sort of talk about, oh, well, you know, it's half a day here, half a day there, and we turn up and play on a Saturday.
Patrick Dangerfield, the biggest selling point, and he's just thrived, is so you play on a Friday, Boomer, you don't have to go into the club for recovery. You do it in the ocean, wherever. And he, sometimes they mightn't be required till Monday afternoon. There's some extraordinary thing. He can have 3 or 4 days off in a row. Yeah. And that's how Geelong have set it up. They've got a more experienced team than others.
I do understand that.
Yeah.
Yep.
But that appealed to the best player in the game, how they run it. Because mentally,
there you go.
He's fresh. Right there. And, yeah. But I understand, like you mentioned, Carlton can't do that because they're trying to teach them.
The thing is,
well, the perception is they can't do it.
Yeah, they should.
You got to remember, the draft, you get drafted, or used to be 17. You could get drafted at 17. I got drafted at 17. You're going from school. You're completing year 12, pretty much going in to getting drafted. So you've been told your whole life from your parents what to do.
Yeah,
you've been told what time to be at school, and this is what time you're finishing. To go into a football club, to saying, this is what time you're starting. This is what time you're doing weights. This is what time you're doing boxing, yoga, meeting. This is what time you can go home. And then just a big build-up. There's no stimulation in terms of what you've got control over. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does.
And
I think half, you know, we think of Beyond Blue, which is something that Jeff Kennett's been, you know, so passionate about, and it just seems to be coming more and more necessary, that, you know, those sort of support agents to be able to help not only AFL players, but just people in general. And I don't know why life's necessarily changing, but it is.
As soon as you were talking about the structure that the players were included with as soon as they walked into the system, Boomer, and even from school and being told what to do, and this is where you are, when you are. I got thinking immediately, and I often think about this, that sometimes it's so structured that within an inch of its life that players don't have to take responsibility for their own lifestyle often enough, and they just fall into a routine of becoming almost robotic about their life because that's what's laid out for them, where they don't have to think too hard. The managers take care of their finances. It's just not a normal world. And I reckon that's a bit of a detriment to the game as well. Do you reckon that's could be part of it?
100%. It's so routine that it's too much routine. Like I said, you get told exactly what time to be there, and I mean, you're waking up. If you're 2 minutes late, there's punishments, there's fines now, there's, you know, for repeat offenders and all this stuff. But there's no... I know a lot of people are going to find it hard to believe this, but like there's not a lot of stimulation in terms of mind and making your own decisions. Everything is structured. And for some people, that's fantastic. Maybe for the first 2 years. But then you've got to get out. I'm massive on our boys keeping a diary just so they don't let people down when they're trying to organise an appearance or something like that.
Yeah. Like little things like that. Paying your bills, you know. Paying your bills
things.
On time.
Don't get your manager to do it. You do it. Take some responsibility. I know these young kids live at home until they're 19,
you
20,
you say
21.
That flippantly, Boomer, but a lot of AFL players have their managers paying their car registration, paying their bills, right. Doing
it's
all
an
that
easy
sort of
structure,
stuff
and there's no... You can wake up on your day off to what? What are you waking up to? Like some guys are waking up at 12 o'clock, 11 o'clock, just because they just need that sleep in, they just need to relax and do nothing. I don't think it's a... I'll just say less is more. Being at the club land right now, local club, I reckon there's a balance, and clubs can strip it up. And I really... Scotty, I love what you said about Dangerfield. That was a selling point to go to Geelong, play on a Friday, go for a surf in the ocean on a Saturday as recovery. Don't do nothing Sunday. Come in Monday, ready to go.
Yeah.
Ready to go. That's the big thing, though. You've got to be ready to go. You have to be ready to go and give everything. But I reckon instead of being there for 6 hours a day, be there for four and a half, maybe five. But get in there and get out.
I want to talk about Lindsay Thomas. You know him very well. He's one of your good mates, Boomer, from the Kangaroos. And was it four weeks since he got suspended for in the VFL?
Yeah, I think he got three, but with the buys and everything there, Daniel ended up being five.
He came back last week. and found himself suspended again. Boomer, how's he doing, Lindsay Thomas? Is this a sign of his frustrations at how his year's gone so far?
I guess it would be a little bit frustrating for him to miss 3 or 5 weeks and then come back and get another week. I don't think it was undisciplined or anything last week in the reserves. He actually had the football in his hand.
It's pretty dangerous. I reckon he's lucky to get one.
Well, I actually haven't seen the incident, but a few other people have said that to me as well.
I don't think it was a frustrating act. I thought it was a dangerous act, Daniel, but I don't think it was because of what's gone on over the last sort of 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, he had the ball, I've been told, and he made contact with...
Was it as bad as Luke Shuey or not?
Which one, Luke Shuey? Yeah, what did he do?
That one. He's still smarting from...
I'm still
Luke
smarting
Shuey.
On him.
Oh, for the buff. Oh, Scotty.
But look, we'll go back to Lindsay, because in that 5 week period, we made it a goal for him to get super fit. Now he's changed his body shape. He is leaned down. I think he's lost about 3 or 4 kilos.
Wow.
But he's stronger in the gym. So the 5 weeks has been fantastic. He was doing cross trainers every single day.
Why has it taken this, Boomer, for that light bulb moment?
Sometimes it just, that's what it is. It just happens. But we'll stick on a positive for him, because he did go back for 5 weeks, and I know he was in contention to play some senior football.
Turner's out.
Well, I'm talking about last week. I know his name would have got thrown around at match committee, and he didn't get a game. He goes back now, plays a game in the VFL, unfortunately gets suspended for another week. Seen him on Monday and Tuesday. Monday was moping around a little bit, I won't lie to you. That's how Lindsay is, and that's how I would have been, and that's how 99% of everybody else in the world would have been if that same thing happened. But Tuesday, he was back in the grind, back in the gym, doing another cross trainer and doing weights, and had the smile back on his face. So he'll have this weekend off. We'll go watch the boys. We just mentioned Kane Turner's got an injury now. I'm not sure how long he'll miss, but I think a spot opens up for a natural half forward to come back in, and hopefully Lindsay comes straight back into the team, and I know his football is as good as anybody's at the Kangaroos, or as a small forward maybe in the league, to get a game and continue playing.
Probably gains heart out of the inclusions of Swallow and Dore to a degree as well, that have been sort of off the radar for a little while and having to earn their stripes back in the VFL to get a game. So he's probably seen that there is reward for effort for those guys. If he can get some form and continuity, Boomer, that there would be a chance to get back in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't even think he needs to have a lot of continuity. I think he just needs to go out there and have a good game of football, have a really good blowout. And I don't think it would be too long before he's in. Or I hope not anyway, because I think he's at his best. I still rate Lindsay as one of the really good small forwards in the competition, who can take a great mark, kick a few goals, also a few points. But no, he's back. He's up and about this week. He's going to miss, unfortunately. He'll probably have the angry pills... watching the game of football on Saturday night and knowing that he could have been out there, but he won't be.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club from this morning. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.